This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. There are more than 76 million baby boomers living in the U.S., according to 2014 census data. Despite that aging population, there's a knowledge and experience gap when it comes to caring for seniors. Now the University of Cincinnati Claremont College is offering a new health and aging course. And here to talk about the course is UC Claremont Department of Humanities and Social Sciences Adjunct Associate Professor Dr. Deborah Moffitt and Program Director of Experiential Learning and Career Services Monica Royal Fisher. You can join us 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Debbie and Monica, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you for asking us.
Debbie, what led you to create this course on health and aging? How did this whole thing get started?
The course has been around for almost a decade.
Okay.
And we've been teaching it now and then when we had enough students that were interested. But recently, because of the aging boomer generation, we have been looking into expanding the opportunity beyond our students to the community, to the communities, so that people who have aging parents or who are aging themselves have an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what resources are out there, the opportunities for thinking about creative or effective communication strategies working with older parents or grandparents, and trying to bring more people into the realm of thinking about gerontology as a career, not just in traditional jobs of healthcare and social work, but across the spectrum of career opportunities from law to accounting, travel and hospitality. There's a wide range of people and places where elders may encounter individuals who could benefit from that kind of training.
Define that term for me, Debbie, gerontology.
Gerontology is the study of people who are aging. And we tend to look at it in demographic generations with the baby boomers who were born between 46 and 64, the Gen Xers who are a smaller population by comparison to the data that we have on people 65 and older. Actually, it's 52 and older because the people born in the late early 60s actually haven't turned 60 yet. They're like in their 50s at this point. But the people that are labeled as Gen X, they were the next group of the next cohort group that came through, and they're now in their 30s, 40s, and moving into their 50s. But there's not as many of them. The original data that I shared with you in the article was 49 million. That data has actually changed as of 2016. They're now closer to 60 million, but there's still not enough of them to take care of 76 million,
yeah.
You know, of the seniors. And one of the things that we're thinking about is the millennial generation. There are 80 million of them, more or less, and there will continue to be more of them as the years progress. And we're really hoping to find a way that we can marry up the youngest generation with the diversity and the ability to think creatively outside the box, whether electronically or in face-to-face communication, with the older generation so that they can take some of the burden off those 60 million people in the middle that are supposed to take care of every grandmother, grandparent, mom, dad, cousin, aunt, uncle, etc. So that's kind of why we've decided to do some external marketing and invite the community in.
So, Monica, the whole idea behind this is that this is beneficial to not just people who want to go into gerontology as a profession, but pretty much anybody, right?
Right. I think, to Debbie's point, when you think about business and you think about populations and you think about who are going to be your consumers, you look at this huge population, this older slash elderly population, and they need to be served in some way. And this certificate provides a nice way for people who work in industries that you wouldn't necessarily consider to be related to become relatable so that they can become what my world would call a silver industry.
So, well, you had a personal experience with this, didn't you, as far as caring for an older loved one, didn't you?
Yes. My mother moved from Virginia to Ohio in 1998, and she lived with us until she passed away in 2014. Now, she already had a mental illness before she moved in with us. But later on, she developed some other kinds of health issues, and she needed care, but not the kind of care that we would think of. So in the early years, she was still driving her car. She was very independent. She would fly here, there, and everywhere to go visit family. But after about the age of 85, she started winding down a bit, and we needed to provide more regular care for her. And there was a point in time when we hired a home care agency to be present in the home with her as a companion. She didn't need she could dress, bathe, cook. She could do all the regular activities that anybody would do in a household. But she, being alone when my husband and I were at work, was becoming a problem. So we hired a person to come in a couple of days a week to be with her during the times that we had to be away at work. And that changed the dynamic of how she aged so that she always had someone there in case we couldn't be at home. And at one point, I don't even remember what year it was, but at one point my husband is retired from the federal government now, but he wasn't then, but he could telecommute. So there was one year, I think, that he worked at home one day a week so that I could go to work and she didn't have to have the companion every single day.
And what you went through is not uncommon nowadays. I mean, how common is it for people to find themselves caring for an older loved one?
It's very common. Demographically speaking, there are more women who are responsible for caring for the elder members of their family than men, but there are equally enough men in all kinds of living situations that are probably doing that with partners or helping out spouses, and it gets more egalitarian depending on the basis of your relationship and who does what for whom. But most people want to live independently or with others for as long as they possibly can. The myth that everybody that gets old goes to a nursing home is really a myth. And one of the things that we talk about in the class is dispelling that myth. Some of the data from the Pew Research study that I looked at recently, people live alone. They live with spouses and partners. They live with extended families. They may have their families come live with them if they have a bigger house. There's an interesting dynamic that there's a lot of grandparents that are raising grandchildren. And they are the primary caregivers for grandchildren, but not necessarily grandchildren that are adults, but grandchildren that are youngsters, that are the children of their sons and daughters. People, by and large, want to stay in familiar environments where they know where everything is and their friends and neighbors are there and they can get from point A to point B. And the number of people that are actually going into skilled nursing facilities is very, very small now by comparison. There's the issues of affordability. So we have many elders that fall all over the income scale, from people that are well off enough to be able to move into one of those high-end senior whatever kinds of living facilities, to people that need subsidized housing. In Claremont County, we have 240, right? We have 240 apartments for seniors that is income-based. And it's not Section 8. It's income-based. They evaluate their income and their needs, and they're able to determine who is eligible for these 240 apartments in our county.
You know, when we talk about the older population, it's a very diverse group, isn't it?
It is. It is. Every ethnicity, people speaking all kinds of
different income levels,
different languages.
Different health statuses. And
different cultural backgrounds, all of that. Is part and parcel to who the population is.
How well are we doing at addressing the needs of the older population? How do we do in this country at that?
You know, I think there's opportunity. I think that's part of this whole idea of silver industries that are really tailored towards helping elders beyond just their health care. Because I think for a long time, that's been the focus, is just health care or just sort of these community resources to help them get through their day to day. But there's a lot of other things to think about. There's the financial aspects. There's the cultural aspects. There could be, you know, genuine business concerns that are really specific to elderly individuals versus, you know, you or I.
Yeah, for example, you know, I know people that, people working cooperatively, that's where they go out and they work with people like cleaning their yards and helping them
taking
out.
Care of household chores and needs
right.
and things like that. Yes.
So there are groups in the city and the communities around us that will go and help to rehab people's houses if that's need be. I remember I was thinking about a specific incident. There was a person in Claremont County in the New Richmond area who is a roofer. And there were two roofers with the same name. And there was this elderly couple that asked for somebody to come help fix their roof. And that that person was not the person that I know, but it was somebody else that had the same last name. And that person came and stripped everything off their roof and walked away. So the roofer that we happen to know, because he had the same last name, he stepped in and he said, "I will take care of the roof." He didn't know this couple. He just wanted to make sure that they were not exploited. And that's just a small town community kind of reaction to reaching out to your neighbor next door and helping them out without them having to have the burden of being exploited.
That's a great story. So in the course itself, Debbie, what's it like? I mean, what kinds of things do you do? Is this more of an experiential course?
It's a little bit of both. We start out the course by thinking about our thoughts about what it means to get older, and the typical stereotypical things of, you know, what do you think? Where do you think people live? What do people look like? How do we talk to people that are older than us? And then we move into discussions of what it means to age well or to age healthfully. And then we talk a bit about communication, how to have effective communication. One of the things that people can do is learn to use appropriate, I hate that word appropriate, use language that is not ageist. So, it's the little old lady. No, we don't want to call her the little old lady. We want to talk to her like we're talking to anybody else. It's kind of like when people talk down to kids. We don't want to talk down to our elders. They've lived this long. They deserve our respect. So we talk about communication. We look at what happens when issues or concerns or health circumstances interfere with a person's ability to age well or to age healthfully. And there are some experiential learning opportunities. We have an opportunity for students. Now, I teach this class online, so they do this virtually. But we do an experiencing aging exercise that they have to do at home with friends and photograph themselves doing these activities. And it has to do with simulating what it's like to get old. So we do things with holding your nose and tasting different foods to see if you can actually taste it. Or putting lentils in your shoes if you do not have diabetes. Do not do this if you have any kind of diabetic condition.
Any nerve pain from diabetes.
They learn to simulate what diabetic nerve pain feels like. And a whole host of other things that we do with that activity. There's like 12 or 15 things.
Hearing cotton in the ears, maybe?
Hearing cotton in the ears. Oh, and there's a... I got this from a colleague of mine when I was in grad school. So if you have hearing loss, your brain doesn't process information as fast as it used to. Because the time it takes, even if you use a hearing aid, the time it takes for the sound to get from your ear to your brain is longer. So the experiment is you have to ask somebody a question and then set a timer for 30 seconds before you expect them to answer. And that's really hard when you can talk instantaneously and process information instantaneously. But I've had students who've gone home and followed the instructions with their spouses and their grandparents. And they went, it was a much better conversation when I waited. So we do that. They have an opportunity to learn about community resources. And probably one of the most important ones is advocacy, learning how to help protect individuals from being exploited, abused, neglected, self-neglect. We have in Claremont County, Monica and I just recently had a meeting with Claremont Senior Services, which is our branch of Council on Aging. And the police department, our sheriff's department, they have a senior officer program where officers go and visit the seniors that are still living alone just to check in on them. So it's part of our community to have the law enforcement folk have a hand in keeping people safe. So we talk about those kinds of resources along with a lot of other ones.
How do the students react to this? I imagine a lot of them are younger.
Most of the students that have taken this course take it for personal reasons. I have very few that only take it for academic degree reasons. And I have people, I've had people that were younger, I've had people that are sort of more towards middle age, and I've had a few people that are probably in their 60s as well that take the class. But they, by and large, they're taking it because they want to know more about how to age well, and they want to know how to take care of the people in their lives and in their community.
Is there any one thing where the students say, boy, that surprised me. I never realized that, never understood that, never knew that about the aging population?
I think a lot of it has to do with the perception shift. You know, when you take your worldview, and if your worldview tends to be younger, you know, maybe a traditional college student, you don't have the scope to really understand how things are received on the other end of the spectrum when you're talking to somebody who maybe is your grandmother or your grandfather. You know, you have that communication breakdown. Grandma uses cell phone. Grandma, why is your phone wired to the wall? You know, just some of these little practicalities that I think it's eye-opening when you start to really learn why things are the way that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other thing is the certificate that we have, and it actually has some benefits for job potential. But I'm going to have Monica speak to that because I don't know.
You can get the certificate whether you intend to pursue
this
or not as a
yes.
career or not.
It's a standalone certificate that prepares you for a kind of an entry level starting point in the gerontology field.
Or the other option with a certificate like this is to layer it on top of something that you already have. And I like to use the example of a financial advisor. Someone who is working in that field could benefit from a certificate like this because as you think about an elderly population and you think about what their financial planning needs might look like, the rationale behind it and sort of the impetus behind it is very different than if someone were sitting down with me to go through my finances. And by having this certificate, it gives you that level of awareness and understanding of what that population really needs, what they're thinking about, you know, what their driving forces are, what are their goals, because they're very, very different. So I think it just prepares you for a market that's just ripe.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the career opportunities and how big is the demand for people in elder care?
I think you have to look at it on both sides of the equation. The traditional side would be the healthcare side, and that is growing every day. You know, there's a huge need for home health aides and, you know, folks who work in the nursing communities, the healthcare communities. But the other side of it, I think, is fairly limitless. Mm-hmm. So you look at business managers, you look at art teachers, you look at, you know, people who work in the park system. They all have the potential to benefit from being able to think about a potential segment of the population that would use their service a little bit differently.
What are some of the attributes that you need to work in a field that deals with gerontology?
Well, I think part of it is that you have to be open to working with generations that may not be similar to yourself.
Right.
Okay.
I think you need patience. I think you need to be able to kind of set aside your own biases and really mm-hmm. think about things through a different lens. So being able to kind of widen that perspective that you have and not try to force your opinion or your view of something on somebody else.
Would you say patience is the biggest one, though, Monica?
I think patience is the biggest one of all because you just need to be aware that someone is coming from such a different place than you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, this course is open to anybody.
It is.
It's online. Is it, for the fall semester?
Yes, it's available online this semester.
Okay. How do people get enrolled in this?
There's a process that occurs with people from the community or students going through an enrollment procedure. And I got the information just the other day. The deadline to register for a course for fall has now passed, I think. It's the 11th of mm-hmm. – it was the 11th of – what day is today? I think it's the 11th, right, of August was the last day that you could actually register.
And today's the 9th, so we've got a couple of days.
So we got a couple of days. But there's a basic form that people can – acquire through the university website. You'd have to go to the University of Cincinnati website, and there is a process that I have printed up. I mean, I could send information to people if they contact us. Filling out a basic information form and indicating an interest in enrolling for a single class that is not necessarily for a degree program, and then signing up for the class, and if they sign up for it by a certain date, they should still be able to take it in the fall. if that is not going to work out time-wise for someone, then they would be able to take the class in the spring. The goal, we've taught this class for a while online.
It's just this is the first time you've done it online. So
No. Oh. I've been doing this online since about 2013.
Oh, okay.
But not every semester. Some years I teach both semesters. Some years I only teach one semester.
Okay. So it's becoming a more regular thing.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Debbie. And thank you, Monica.
Yes.
UC Claremont Department of Humanities and Social Sciences Adjunct Associate Professor Dr. Deborah Moffitt and Program Director of Experiential Learning and Career Services Monica Royal Fisher. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Here and Now is next on 91.7 WVXU. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss implicit bias, those unconscious stereotypes and misperceptions we can hold, especially about people who may seem different than us. Go to WVXU.org to take one of the implicit bias tests, then let us know what you think. Do you agree, or were you surprised at the results? Then hear what others learned about themselves from the tests. That's Cincinnati Edition, Thursday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.